You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Sierra Guardia about her vested purchase practice startup model. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Sierra Guardia grew up in Texas. As a teenager and throughout her undergraduate career, she was a competitive FEI dressage rider, as well as competing in three-day eventing. She attended Texas A&M University, earning a Bachelor's of Science degree in Animal Science and then her DVM from the veterinary school. Her career goal was to be a leader in equine orthopedics and sports medicine, and she became qualified as an FEI treating veterinarian early in her career. After working with several prominent practices and honing her skills, Dr. Guardia started her own solo sports medicine practice, Guardia Equine, in 2016 in Houston. Welcome, Dr. Guardia.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Grice. It's wonderful to be here.
It's always good to have you. You know, you gave such an inspiring presentation about staying in equine practice at the 2024 AAEP convention. What inspired you and Kashleen Delbecca to write the paper about the stay factor?
Well, thanks for inviting me to talk about it on this podcast. It was an honor to be able to be on that stage once again at AAP and to present something that I think is really valuable, especially in the times that we're in with the delicate balance of equine practitioners and people staying or leaving the practice. So for us, after building a successful practice and writing a paper about that process in 2022, my local Equine Veterinary Association, the Texas Equine Vet Association, had asked me if I would like to speak at their annual convention in 2023. Over the summer. And I felt that that presentation would be even better if we focused on more than one practice and more than one model for entrepreneurship. So I suggested I give a co-presentation with one of my vet school classmates, as you mentioned, Dr. Kashleen Delbecca. She had started a practice from scratch right after her internship. Similar to me, she had started early in her career, but her method and her practice style were very different than mine. And I felt that that would be very valuable to hear more than one perspective, because sometimes one perspective, if someone sees that perspective and thinks, oh, I'll never find that exactly perfect scenario, I may not as well try. I think it's important to see that there's many ways. I truly wanted any young practitioner or student to hear as many examples of practice founding as possible. After that talk, one of the veterinarians in the audience in August of 2023 at the Texas Equine Association, he was actually on one of the committees for the AEP that was involved in the section in which we were asked to speak. He suggested we give that same talk at the AEP convention in 2024. So that's when the paper and subsequent presentation was born.
Perfect. It's so great how that just dovetailed into getting it to, you know, out there to more people.
So yeah, I'm grateful for that for sure.
Yeah, because I mean, people are, even if they weren't in the room, the business sessions are always a little bit less attended,
but especially 8 a.m. that day.
yeah. They're recorded. So people do see this stuff, you know, it's really good.
Yeah, agreed.
And to bring it to a national audience. So tell us about your vested purchase practice startup model and how it helped you stay in equine practice and form the practice that you wanted.
Sure. So I'll just give the abbreviated version because we go into more detail in the paper that I presented in 2022 called Seeding the Field to Grow Future Owners. I think that would be a really valuable resource to add on to this podcast if someone's interested in learning more about the specifics of the percentage breakdown and more of the financial side of it, because that is spelled out much more clearly in that paper. And it might be great. I don't know if you can link it in the show notes or how that works, but
I
that might be cool.
Will.
Cool. Yeah. So after my internship, after vet school, I went and did an internship at a very busy equine surgical facility, a referral center. I took a job as an associate veterinarian in a roughly 2-doctor equine general practice. And I was at that practice as an associate for 2 years. During that time, I faced similar obstacles and frustrations that many others face that drive them out of equine practice. And I was given that opportunity, not necessarily to leave, but I found myself questioning my future and wondering if I had chosen the wrong path, similar to everybody else that has faced that at one point in their life. I was fortunate enough at that time. I actually had gone through the first couple of meetings of decade one that Dr. Grice had actually formed and still is running successfully. I had attended a couple of the meetings and met another veterinarian that was attending that. And this mutual veterinarian friend of hers who had also helped her start her practice, she suggested I speak with him. And I was not in the position to start a practice. I wasn't even considering, I knew that I didn't even know what to do. I wasn't considering leaving the practice I was in at that time. I just was very frustrated and didn't know what to do. So at that point, I was introduced to that mentor, and he had offered to not only mentor me, but also start a practice if that was what I felt would be a good opportunity to find a pathway to stay in equine medicine. And I don't think I can make it clear enough to say I had absolutely no intention of ever being a business owner. I had absolutely no clue what I was doing, but I also didn't believe I had it in me to build it successfully. Thankfully, my business partner and co-founder believed in me more than I believed in myself. He offered to financially support the bigger risks of starting a practice and to mentor me along the way for the first 5 years of the startup. After that time, the plan culminated in assigning value to that future practice and then allowed me to purchase the remaining 50% so that I could be 100% owner. Over those initial 5 years, I gained equity in the practice every year by 10%. So after year one, I owned 10%, year two, 20, and so forth. Until the 5-year mark, we were 50-50 partners. Day one of the practice, I was provided all of the equipment by my mentor that was needed to do full pre-purchase exams on day one. And I believe that that really allowed me to establish myself as a sports medicine practice without the large debt of those pieces of equipment, which they can certainly rack up. At the time of buyout, that equipment plus the vet box and any other items that were used as for the practice were rolled into the value of the practice. And so that became part of the purchase price at the end. I became the sole owner of my practice 5 years into the process in 2021 and have been continuing to grow it since that time. My mentor is still available anytime I need him. And that is a part of the model that cannot be valued in my mind. Had my mentor not come into my life at the right time, I believe I would have left equine practice. I had lost the joy for what I was doing and felt like I was drowning. Now my practice has been established in such a way that I have financial freedom as well as freedom in my schedule and freedom to schedule appointments that keep me engaged and excited, freedom to work less, but at a higher intensity. I feel that I am being a better doctor when I have more control. And I think that I'm also a better human being, probably a better wife, better sister, better daughter than I could be otherwise.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
I just love how this all played out, and I love that you gave this talk in 2022, because what this model does is allows people to have that mentorship and create practice without the financial and believe me, mental stress of feeling like they don't know what they're doing. So that information was just so important to get out there. What do you think, despite the mentoring and the equipment and all of the support you had, what was the most challenging thing about starting your own practice?
I think that a lot of different entrepreneurs and practice owners can answer this question so many different ways. And I've been posed this question so many times. I've asked other entrepreneurs what they thought, and we all have different answers. I think for me personally, though, and I still struggle with this, and it's something that I'll probably always fight, but I think the phrase is imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I struggle with that hardcore. And it gets easier to fight over time. But if for those that aren't aware of what that is, it's just where you believe that any success you've been given in your life, or you've achieved, I should say, has been either by happenstance or because you've got people fooled and you're not really valued to that degree, or you don't believe that you earned the spot that you're in. And so I felt that quite a bit. And I still fight that sometimes, almost weekly, at least. I grew up in a very small town, and I never thought that I'd be something or anyone who would seek out an opportunity like that, or that someone would seek my services out because they found value in that. It took me a long time to develop confidence without anyone in my office to discuss cases or anything like that. But I think I would have faced that at that point in my career anyways. So it was more of a growing opportunity that it's kind of like learning how to swim. You know how to dog paddle, but you're just learning how to swim in the pool, but nobody's really teaching you what to do. You just kind of figure it out. I luckily had a mentor that would be, you know, on the sidelines yelling at me what to do, or give me some advice, but he let me have enough rope to kind of make it my own way, which I think was the best way for me to personally learn. But I still struggle with the confidence side of it. And I think as an entrepreneur, when you're on your own, especially starting from scratch, I had no clients, had nothing. Starting from nothing is challenging because just the fear of failure, feeling like you're jumping off a bridge and you don't know if there's ground underneath you or there's just a black abyss. And it does get better, but you do have to take that leap. And so I had to learn to really trust myself, and then also just listen to the mentors and the supportive people in my life that said, no, you really actually can do this. I know you can. Here's why. And that helped a lot, but it took time. I also think it took a really long time to take that value assignment and charge for my services appropriately. I grew up in a house where any kind of talk about money or anything like that was a source of contention or arguments or whatnot. And so just talking about finances just really sent me into a panic attack. I'm also really cheap, and I didn't want to hire an assistant for a really long time. And then when I finally did have a part-time assistant in the beginning, after 2.5 years, I hired a part-time assistant, and it was so much more helpful. And then hiring a full-time assistant made me that much more efficient and effective. I could do better medicine, and I started to learn the value of that. So investing as needed, I've started to learn those things, but man, that was hard. Seeing a paycheck deducted from my bank account every 2 weeks, oh, that was tough. But the value that they brought to me, to the practice, was invaluable. I think the hardest part overall was also charging appropriately for services. And I know that a lot of veterinarians face that. We look at that as putting value on ourselves as opposed to, and the value of ourselves as opposed to the value of the services we're providing or the medications or whatnot. And we have to separate that a little bit. And then also goes back to the imposter syndrome of not knowing or not believing that we are valuable enough to charge. So we undervalue ourselves. And then we are actually training our clients to undervalue us as well. So we're setting that standard. I had to learn to charge what the job was worth, and I had to be brave enough to run credit cards. I think growing up in a household with that idea around finances really kind of made me struggle a little more than the average person. Balancing a profit and loss statement, or learning how to write and control a balance sheet, still gives me the creeps, I'll be honest. Sorry, Dr. Grice. It still creeps me out, but I have to, because cash is king. And if you don't have cash, you can't pay your bills, you can't pay your help, the folks that keep your wheels running. You also can't keep wheels on your tire if you let them have a blowout on the road, which I've done that. I've waited too long to get new tires, and I've been stuck calling a tow truck because my truck is flat. So I've been there, and I've learned those lessons. But I think as entrepreneurs, the most important thing I've learned, at least, is to become comfortable with the uncomfortable things. It's the only way you grow.
Yeah, I love, you know, it goes hand in hand, not wanting to charge and not having confidence. The imposter syndrome and the not wanting to charge appropriate fees, it's like just you know, one hand is gripping the other and they go hand in hand. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's, you know, such good advice. It really is.
I'd say one thing that helped me with that too, is having an assistant or having, I now have a full-time technician in the truck with me. And then I have a remote office assistant. And being able to put in the charges or write an estimate and email it to the client or anything like that, where the client looks at the finances without looking me in the eye, makes a big difference. And then separating myself from the person taking the money, like saying, oh, no, that's doctor, you know, that's Sarah's job, or whoever is in my office, saying that's their job to answer the phone. That's their job to get your credit card. They will, if you have questions about the charges and stuff, I'm still in control of all of that, because my staff is, of course, coming back to me and confirming and checking and all the things. But separating yourself from the bill really makes a difference, because it separates your value and also your care for that animal away from the bill. And I think that that has been very valuable for me, because it allows me to truly show my genuine compassion for these patients and their owners. Because a lot of times we're the psychiatrist for the owner more than we are the doctor for the horse. But just knowing that they separate the invoice from my level of care has been valuable for me.
Yeah, I find that that is very true for many veterinarians, that they're a little uncomfortable with the money aspect and the transactional part because of the caring for the patient. And so having staff as a layer of separation can be incredibly helpful. That way. The other good thing that staff do is if you try to say, oh, let's just charge, you know, they go, no, Dr. Gardia, we're not discounting that charge. You did the work and you're fabulous. And no, we're not doing that, right?
Janelle, my office manager, still does that. She'll be like, well, you charged this last time, so I don't know. Are you sure? And I'll go, nope, you're right. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, they hold your feet to the fire because they know your value. Yeah. So if there were people out there listening today that thought that would be so cool, I would love to do that. What do you have any advice for sort of identifying or approaching a mentor? I mean, you didn't know your mentor when you started, right? So any thoughts?
So in my scenario, I knew who the mentor was. I knew of him in my area, which was almost more intimidating, because I felt like, well, no way this guy's going to help me. he's too important, you know, that imposter syndrome coming back. And that alone was terrifying. Meeting with him, we met over lunch at a restaurant on my day off. And just having that conversation was absolutely terrifying. But I would say, whether you have someone in mind already, like if you're the mentee looking for a mentor, whether you have someone in mind already or not, or you know them or not, shoot your shot, because you never know. And most of the time, that mentor, that established practitioner, especially if they're successful, they've already either done what you're about to do and started something from scratch, or they're a partner in something larger. And often, as I believe was the case in my mentor, they're looking for the next thing. They're looking for the next generation to invest in, or they're looking for someone that potentially could help take the load off of them if they're overwhelmed with too many clients, or maybe they're in a part of their career where they're taking a step back from physical in-person practice, and they have a little more time on their hands, and they kind of want to mentor the next generation. So I think that sometimes you'd be surprised how many people are actually interested. I'd also say that if you take the time to read the paper that we spoke about called Seeding the Field to Grow Future Owners, from the 2022 publication, that shows a chart that explains all a hypothetical scenario that was very similar to my practice. And the mentor stands to gain financially significantly. I believe in that scenario it was over $400,000 of profit over the 5 years. And it is not only financially beneficial, but like I said, the mentorship is a two-way street. Really, the mentor gets quite a bit out of the mentorship process. That was one of the questions that the moderator asked during the 2024 presentation was, so if I'm a mentor, what's the upside? You know, why would I want to do this? And I just think it's so beneficial, but it depends on the motivation of the mentor. Yeah, you're going to make money. You will financially benefit from this over time if you pick the right mentee that is a hustler and is ready to, you know, hungry to start and has a good plan and all of the things. But you also develop that relationship that cannot be understated. Like I said, my mentor is still, I could text him right now and with a question. We have a little group chat called the Think Tank, and we text, you know, cases or just goofy things. And it's just really good to know that you're not alone. And as a solo practitioner, that's really valuable. The paper walks through more of the specifics about the financial side of it. But once you find a mentor that you want to partner with, or if you're a mentor looking to invest in an early practitioner, I would remind that relationship that it's similar to a marriage. You need to be compatible enough to have really difficult conversations. And you also need, and that's something I didn't know my mentor personally when we started. So this all developed over our mentorship period. You also need to respect each other enough to have those tough days. I remember being scolded, not scolded, but, you know, reminded, hey, you got to run those credit cards because we've got a credit card bill to pay and we don't have any cash in the bank. And so I just had to really learn that the hard way. And I now check my bank account every single day to make sure that there are no surprises. So those are lessons that I have learned through the mentorship process. But I think just having the courage to have those hard conversations as the mentor, and then knowing that it's for the right purpose, it's said with, you know, with caring behind, but it's to remind the mentee that this is a training process still. They're not ready to fly on their own just yet. They need to learn those really important, valuable principles of business, because this is a business in the end. And profit isn't a dirty word. You have to make profit in order to get better. So I would just make sure that you have a really strong relationship. And if it's someone you don't know yet, you know, do your research on the person, Google them, find out what they've done in their life. Are they respected in their community? Do they do community service or giving projects? You know, how I wouldn't say philanthropic because that doesn't matter as much, but just what else are they doing in their lives? Because if all they're doing is vaccinating horses and floating teeth all day long, and they've never really done any of the business side of it, it may not be the best mentor for you. So do a little digging. I once asked my mentor how he knew that I was going to be the right one to invest in. And he said, "Don't you think I did a little digging on you first?" And I thought, well, yeah, I guess. I mean, I did my own digging on him. So I guess it goes both ways. So just do a little bit of research. And I would say maybe the mentor that you need isn't necessarily the sports medicine or the dental or whatever specialty person in your area. But, you know, yes, you might want to learn those specific skills, but it might not be the best person to manage a business or the best at coaching people. So prioritize their business and leadership skills beyond their ability to inject a set of cervical facet joints. It's fine if they are able to do that, but I think that those skills are really what's going to benefit you as an entrepreneur more than the physical skills of practice. And I would also look in your geographical area and see what's missing. I know in my area, there was a surplus of referral centers, excellent hospitals, but there weren't that many ambulatory only veterinarians that were excellent at sports medicine. We had the odd surgeon here or there. There are some associates that would leave their referral practices to do mobile work, but there wasn't anybody that was primarily mobile, and that fit a niche that was missing in my geographical area at the time. So I would look at your area, see what's missing, see what you are most interested in, and try to build your practice around that.
Excellent advice. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I mean, I could talk on this subject for hours.
I know you have,
I used to be nervous
have a
about
lot to share, and it's great.
Well, and I would just say, you know, reach out to me personally. I'm more than happy to talk on the phone or text or have conversations with folks. People ask me a lot to, you know, give them advice on certain situations. And I'm more than happy to do that because I believe to whom much is given, much is required. And I am here to help the next generation in whatever way I can. I can't speak highly enough about the method that we use to establish the practice, both from a financial standpoint of, you know, more stability and security, less anxiety on my end, being invested in and having a base salary and knowing that I wasn't going to not be able to pay my rent or my car payment. But then also financially, that mentor made a good amount of money from the deal. So that was a great, mutually beneficial. But I would remind folks that it's not only one way. It was exactly what I needed at the time, but there's lots of other methods of starting your practice. And I believe Dr. Dobeka also shared that information from her perspective as well. So I think that that's really valuable information, and to just take little bits from my perspective, their perspective, and all of that to see what works best for you. I would remember to charge, remember to collect, and raise your prices in a timely manner. And there's so many people in my area that are not raising their prices every year. And when I raise my prices, sometimes my clients go, wait, I didn't realize that was my doctor so-and-so used to charge me $25 for a health certificate and for five horses. And I thought, well, that's just not how it is these days. So just what is the phrase? All ships rise when the tide rises, or rising tides raise all ships. That's it.
Right.
If we all charge appropriately and we all know our worth and our value, then everybody will benefit. I would say it will always come back to bite you if you don't start charging appropriately. I think the biggest thing for me is to push yourself beyond the limit that you think you can go. Since starting my practice, I have started advancing my ultrasound training, and I feel very confident with difficult lameness exams now. I've attended all of the ISELP, the International Society for Equine Locomotor Pathology courses, and I'm working on my certification for that. And I think that alone has helped me not only hone my skills as a sports medicine focused practice, but it's a lot. As an entrepreneur, I've been able to afford a little more expensive or a little more frequent CEs in order to attain that goal. So I think that's been a really beneficial thing, because a lot of times you only have a certain stipend, or you can't attend more than one per year. So that's been huge for me. And I've also been able to advance my FEI vet training. And so currently I'm working towards becoming a veterinary delegate so that I can offer that much more experience to my clients. So there's different levels that you have to work through once becoming a treating veterinarian. And I'm working towards becoming a veterinary delegate. My ultimate goal would be to, in some capacity, either treat or veterinary delegate at Olympic Games. So that's down the road. We'll see what happens with that. But I just think that it's really cool to be able to kind of choose your own adventure and choose your own path as an entrepreneur. And I think that was the main goal of this talk, was to try to remind people that the sky really is the limit. And if you can imagine it, there's a chance you can make a practice around it. So I think that it's really cool what I'm able to offer my clients because of those different experiences that I've been afforded. And once you've climbed that mountain, it's pretty cool view to look down and around you and say, I just never thought I'd reach heights that I never even imagined before. So it's a really cool place to be at. There's a book called The Gap in the Game, that talks about, you know, trudging up a hill and working so hard to get to the top of the hill, and you feel like you'll never make it because all you can see is how much farther you have to go. But if you turn around and look back at how far you've come, that's when you're living in the gain at that point, as opposed to the gap. You're looking at, wow, I have come so far. I've accomplished so many things I never could have imagined. Then the hill doesn't seem quite so bad. And then you start thinking about other hills you could climb. So that'd be my encouragement, is to just keep pushing and push yourself beyond the limit you think you can go.
You know, it's so encouraging for the listeners to hear your story and what you've been able to accomplish. I mean, I just love it. And that's why I wanted you to come and talk about it, you know, just let people know. And so thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Gardia. And thank you all listening for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change.